I'm opening.
We have an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Yes. Welcome back, everybody, to Anatomy of a Movie. We are doing the much critically acclaimed Veronica Mars movie after the much critically acclaimed show Veronica Mars. Okay.
On the critically acclaimed.
Meaning Marissa's the critic.
Yes. I claim this movie.
She claims it on all
I loved it. Okay. Yes, hello everyone. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini, and today I have a full panel joining me.
Sweet.
Introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Zachary Hunchar. I do film distribution, and I write comic books on the side.
And our special guest panelist.
Yes, sorry, welcome back. And then, of course, we have...
Dimitri Panos. Hello, everybody.
And...
Hi, guys. Sarah Stretton.
And we also have Phil in the booth.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
And hey, Phil. What do you always say, doing the ones and zeros?
Doing the ones and twos.
Yeah, it's my favorite line from you.
He's manning the ones and twos today for this one. But, okay, so overall thoughts of this movie. Were you guys original fans of the show when it used to air on WB/CW?
I mean, I'll start because I think that I'm kind of the outlier in this group a little bit. Where I knew Veronica Mars, watched it a little bit, but wasn't a, like, follow from beginning to end fan. Not that I didn't like the show, I just didn't watch it that much. So, but when the movie came out, I'm a big fan of Kristen Bell, and I like, you know, the spy, the thriller, so I was like, I will watch this, definitely. And I was excited. I was excited because of all the publicity around it. I was like, it's great to have a movie that's really pushed and backed by the fans. And overall, I think that the movie did make me feel accepted into the world. I didn't feel too out of the loop. There were a couple of things that I would notice throughout the film being like, I know if I watched the series, I would get this a lot more.
Yes.
That being said, I think that the storyline, like, was intriguing. I thought there were some really good scenes, really good moments, and it was fun to watch. So that's exciting.
Agreed.
Why don't you, I always defer ladies first.
Okay. Well, I was a fan of the show when it was on air, and then after it had actually got canceled, I binge-watched it again. But I admit it's been a few years since I watched it recently.
No one can blame you for that. It's been a long time since the series.
A good 7 years since it aired on TV, and then now they're in this movie. It's a 10-year reunion, and I'm like, okay, if you actually watched the original show, you know it hasn't been 10 years yet, but it is a good writing device to get everyone back together for a reunion.
And it makes the math easy.
Yeah.
Just an even number.
totally.
So, okay, well then, here it is. I never watched the series.
Okay.
You know, not because I didn't hear that it was good. It's just I do watch a lot of TV. I do read a lot. You know, just life gets in the way. And so much TV, so little time, so to speak. I will say that our special guest, Zach, urged me back in the day because we can go into it a little bit. You and I are fans of things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Joss Whedon, Angel. So you know that I watch those shows. And you, I remember you always telling me, hey, you got to check the show out because if you like shows like Buffy, smartly written like that. And in all honesty, it was no slight to the show. I just never got around to seeing it. So,
well, in fairness, sorry, when Veronica Mars aired on TV, you weren't the demographic for it during that time. It was my age. It was for the teenagers, the female teenager demographic. When it was actually occurring. So I can understand why you didn't watch it at that time, but I did because I was that age that was into it.
Well, what are you saying about Zach? He watched it.
Well, I'm not saying guys can't watch it.
Right.
I'm saying for you, I can understand why you probably didn't watch it.
Yeah, again, I think it just came down to so much TV, so little time. And also, so going into the movie, here's what intrigued me. you know how much I love movies, and we've talked about distribution patterns changing. So I was interested in this movie because of this whole Kickstarter thing. This is something that, you know, Kickstarter had been around for a little bit up to this time, but this one is the one that got the attention. Mm-hmm. This one to me was like, look at this. Fans are contributing their good hard-earned money because this is what they want. They want this. And again, initially, you know, Warner Brothers, and I'm like going, great, it's getting the attention of a major studio to get this, and, you know, they're on board. I'm like, wow, this is a fantastic way for fans to potentially get what they want.
I agree.
So then I saw the movie. And I should say, too, I would say within the past couple of years, within the past year or so, I have become a fan of Kristen Bell. Not so much because of her acting chops, but I've seen her in interviews, and she just is great. I mean, she's funny. She mm-hmm. seems intelligent. She had this thing with the paparazzi, which I thought was fantastic, and, you know, scolding them. But the way she handled it was through, like, she was being humorous, sarcastic. I just have come to appreciate her seemingly as a person and an actress now.
I agree. And before we really get into the casting yeah. of this movie, we should talk about how this movie actually got started with Kickstarter. And Zach, yep. and well, you mentioned you're a fan of Veronica true. Mars, and when that was aired. And you know more about the backing process mm-hmm. of this but, Kickstarter.
Well, but I also wanted to get, like, so me being a non-fan, I had wanted to talk about, like, how, whether I liked the movie or not. And yeah. for me, I found it to be watchable. That's about it. It wasn't that I didn't get the references. I like the concept of the sleuth, the private eye. I like how they do the over voice. I liked the smart dialogue. But I will say that I felt it looked like a television episode. It didn't look theatrical. It looked like TV.
And that was the thing. This movie, it felt like one long episode of Veronica Mars. They had all the same beats and cinematography and the writing and the character development. I mean, we didn't really actually get a lot of character development in this movie because they have already been developed in the TV series.
Yeah, no, but I felt that that was to the film's detriment. I didn't think it, to make that leap up to the big screen, it felt like TV where I could have just watched it at home. And I felt also that there were times where it got slow. I felt that it was paced, and I felt that maybe had it been a miniseries, like if they had gone to like a Showtime and did, like, you know, sort of like a True Detective
right.
and make like 8 episodes more and make episodic. This, and I go, wow, you know, it was good. Now, that's not saying if there's a sequel that I won't check it out, you know, but it didn't have the same flair that, say, Serenity had on me, whereas I was a Firefly fan, and you can compare this to Firefly because Veronica Mars has the marshmallows, and, you know, as opposed to the brown coats, very fan driven. I didn't get to see Firefly in its entirety because Fox messed that up. So when Serenity came, I saw Serenity, and that reinvigorated my love for the show. And I went back and I binge watched the show with Veronica Mars. I can't say that I necessarily feel I have to go to Netflix or whatever it's on to watch all 3 seasons of it.
So, yeah, so. I have the DVDs, so yeah, I went so, back to that.
And Zach, too, like you were saying.
What were your impressions of this movie?
Well, I'm a fan of the show, and then I'm a fan of the movie. I was one of the Kickstarter backers. I joined up on the first day, and it was a very exciting experience.
I think you kind of had to join up on the first day.
No, I didn't really know about the Kickstarter mm-hmm. campaign until literally that day. And then coworkers went, wow, are you seeing this thing? And then I went, what? And, oh, Veronica Mars, I love that show. I had no idea they were doing this. So,
It happened so fast.
Yeah, how did you find out about it? Because I found out about it shortly after it happened because, man, the news hit mm-hmm. fast, so... Like, how did you find out about it?
10 o'clock that morning, Pacific time, there was, I said, one of my coworkers was saying, oh, I'm thinking about doing this Kickstarter campaign. And I loved the idea. I debated which version I wanted to spend. The high-end premium was a walk-on role in the show where you get a line. It was like 10 grand. That was mm-hmm. a little out of my budgetary range, but I was part of it, and I literally got nothing done at work that day. I just spent all day watching the number rise and rise and rise. And It was about 4 p.m. when it hit the two million threshold, and it was just, this is crazy. I love it.
So if it's not too personal a question, mm-hmm. like how much, what level did you, do you remember what levels there were and what level did you get in on?
I have my, the page that backers could see, and it lists mm-hmm. all of the different categories. I was in the $200 backer range, which got me a copy of the movie poster signed by the cast, which I still haven't received yet. So Rob, if you're listening, please make sure you get that out. There's a t-shirt, a poster, the stickers, you get the digital copy of the movie, the script downloaded.
Oh.
Yeah. And then you get the backer updates. And Rob was great, at least in the beginning. It was like every half hour you were getting an update. And then it started to slow down a little bit. And then when they got into production, it quieted down. But even as of prior Friday when the movie opened in theaters, there was an update that came through.
And the updates came via an email mm-hmm. or like yeah. did you have to be logged on or they just pinged you with an email?
It only went to the backers. So it only went to the backers. We get the updates.
I think it's interesting because in like looking at the starters and like all these, they had tons of levels ranging, as you said, up to 10,000, but starting at $1. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's fascinating. And to me, if you look at the Kickstarter site, I think that they were also overwhelmed mm-hmm. because their updates, their posts, that like, oh, we need to now create this t-shirt. We need to, they added stickers, which sure. were like an added bonus just mm-hmm. because they had reached so much. And I think that you could tell just from analyzing the Kickstarter website page, how pulled, like thrown back and amazed that they were, that they had all this support. Yeah.
There were all these things that were happening and it's, it gets into this weird area. I maybe this is a topic we'll cover later, where you're looking at how this fund is really going to work. Because essentially, it was funding the film, but you were funding a film that a large corporation owns the copyright on, and you're paying for it. But there's tax that you're paying because you're technically paying for the premiums. Mm-hmm. But then Warner Brothers ended up taking over the premium distribution and the creation because they get better pricing, and it became it's a very weird and murky thing.
Well, I mean, I think that, as you said, it's because of the laws to deal with, and this was really pushed because they went to Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. tried to get this funded, and Warner Brothers was like, okay, prove it,
right.
more or less. Like, go show us they want it, and then it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it was something that I think that Warner Brothers kind of had to be like, oh, well, gotta jump on board now. And then okay. it does get murky because if you do have that much fan support, then mm-hmm. you want to make it the best you can. And
sure.
while seemingly meshing, making it look like a TV show, but where that boundary then comes into with you are actually making a film.
And I think that goes difference. With the audience themselves, the fan base in general, mm-hmm. because 7 years ago, who knew that was going to happen? And
right.
it goes to show that social media nowadays, the power of mm-hmm. social media and just using the internet, Twitter, all these things that are now available to us that weren't available 7 years ago, and just having all those overwhelming numbers come in so fast, and just the fans get this platform to really speak out and demand what they want.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for me, what the way I look at Veronica Mars is I look at it as the start of a learning curve. You know, Warner Brothers, the way I looked at it is, okay, so we had this happen. Warner Brothers sees this. To me, it would be so much more, like, I don't know what above and beyond Warner Brothers ended up contributing. Like, to me, it would have been great, and maybe later on down the line, like, you know, the studio can say, well, if you get us $6 million, like, we'll pitch in another $5 to up
or
your
like
budget.
Match
yeah,
like
well,
match
or, point. Or, you know, sort of something so that, because here's my thing, because I guess because I wasn't on the Kickstarter, I didn't necessarily at the very beginning, I did not realize that part of the deal was that the movie was going to hit theaters and VOD at the same time. Mm-hmm. And my whole thing is, if you're going to reach out to the fans and you want a true theatrical run, give them a theatrical run. Give them that. Like, I don't mind. Like, the free digital download's fantastic. But mm-hmm. do it within a way that it will conform to a, like, almost in a sense, a theatrical window. And give that movie the time to breathe a little bit. Make that money theatrically. Because the fans will go out. And they'll, you know, they'll want to see this movie. And if you make the movie not appear like a television show? Because I read, I have a couple of articles that said that one of their biggest, one from Wired article stating how fans may have ruined the movie for everyone else. If there was more of a budget and you put a little bit more into the story and you made it more theatrical, then you can get the non-fans to go in and go see this. Because if you are one of the uninitiated who may not have heard about the Kickstarter campaign, but they may be interested in Kristen Bell, especially after Frozen now, they'd come out and go, God, this looked cheap if they saw it in the theater. So I don't know. I'm hoping that we can learn from this because I think there's something there. I really do. If you can raise $6 million or $5.7 million and that's fan driven, that to me, the studio should wake up and say, we do have something here. We should give it a little more TLC.
Yeah, sir.
I mean, I don't know that. I think you have some very good points, especially surrounding the Kristen Bell as a brand and building a movie off her. That I understand. But on the other end, I feel like this is such a fan-driven TV movie that we want to stick to that style. And for me, as we talked a little bit about this earlier, where this movie stands for the franchise. Is it the culmination? Is it a reunion? Is it a bridge to the books? Is it a bridge to a sequel? And to do that, that gives this movie a lot of weight and a lot of tasks to accomplish. And on that, I think they managed it really well. Mm-hmm. I think that they did have the reunion aspect where there was a lot of character. For me, sometimes it was a little bit heavy character overload because I was like, oh, I should know who all these people are and their relationships, and I don't quite, but I could follow. And then I knew they were putting in Easter eggs for the fans, you can tell. And if I was a dedicated fan, I want those. It makes me happy.
But I didn't say that you can do that. Make it look like a movie. People, again, your purpose for releasing theatrically is that you go above and beyond the fan base. You want to franchise this out. That's the big word these days. Nobody wants, if you're an uninitiated, you don't want your movie looking cheap.
Okay.
You don't want a cheap looking movie, and that's what it looked like to me.
I understand that, but you have to remember they only have $5 to almost $6 million to make this movie. Big theater movies have bigger budget to that, to have it more theatrically.
Again, that's why I say going further. In the future, again, I'll point to Firefly and Serenity. When you look at Firefly and you look at Serenity, you say, Serenity looks like a movie. It doesn't look episodic.
And I guess that doesn't really bother me because there are so many movies I enjoy that aren't that huge, big budget. But I like small budget films. I like the films that are very almost naturalistic.
You're confusing small budget with the look of a television show, though. Because, again, and I'll cite an example, when Star Trek Next Generation was going off the air, they were going into movies. One of the first things that David Carson, who was a television director, mind you, he was a TV, he directed many episodes of Next Gen. The first things he said to do, we got to scrap everything. We have to rebuild these sets because these are television sets. They're not going to translate on a big screen. We have to make things wider. We have to make them bigger. We have to make our hallways. We have to make this look like a movie. And you could make 12 Years a Slave is a small budget, but it looks like a movie.
Okay, and maybe that's where I disagree, because I like the blurred lines in filmmaking. I like that this did look like a TV show because it's based off a TV show.
Yes.
Maybe it's also because I did see it on a smaller screen. I did do the digital download, so I got to watch it on my TV. I wasn't in a huge theater watching. So maybe if I was in a huge theater, I would have been like, this doesn't feel right.
So you're not perpetuating the movie-going experience by saying that.
Hold on, let me finish. Let me finish. But then you have other shows, like the shows on HBO, like this, where they're going to more of a film quality. I'm going to refer to Game of Thrones.
Sure.
So many people say they come out of that show feeling like they're watching a movie, not a TV show. And I think that you can bend those. I don't think these are hard rules that it needs to be so wide, because you are I love going to movies. I love that. But I also like something that I can take home. If you take a movie, let's just take Avatar. Wow. Amazing. I watched it on the big screen and I was floored. I watch it at home. I watch it while I'm cooking.
And to add to that, you mentioned Serenity, Star Trek, Avatar. those are big, heavy movies with big, a lot of CGI, a lot of special effects, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And Veronica Mars had none of that. This was a very straight... This show is a very straightforward, written, crime kind of sleuth mm-hmm. kind of thing. It didn't have the extra special effects to that. It was more of a story-driven.
And again, you're missing... But again, you're missing the point, because you can have all that, but you can get a cinematographer that's going to make the interiors and exteriors look theatrical. You don't need... It doesn't... Again, I... My whole deal,
need to be theatrical.
But then again, then you're not perpetuating the movie going business, because people look. I have two articles that where the people were. They didn't want it to look. They wanted you. If you're going to make that leap, you have to make. You don't need special effects. You don't need to do any of that. You just need to make it less like it was on your small screen. And again, you know, and I know you are looking at people like you can watch Avatar in your kitchen. That's not the way. Like, I'm here. I want to perpetuate our movie going industry. We have to, because we can't be watching movies on our iPads. That's not the way that these are meant to be. Now, and I understand that this is a television show, but it doesn't mean you have to fall into television convention. You could make it look good without having the special effects. We've talked about movies that are small budgets that use very minimal effects, less CGI, that you can make that movie. So all I'm getting at is just reach for the stars. Make this leap so that people, you want to perpetuate. You don't want people coming away thinking your movie looked cheap. You just don't.
I think that while there are people who are going to say this, because people love to have opinions about movies. That's why mm-hmm. we get this show. That's why we're talking about them. That's why we want to like engage with people and find out their opinions. But for this particular movie, this is what I'll say. It's based off a TV show, and I completely support going to the movies. But if 3 out of 4 people are like, you know what, it didn't bother me, it didn't stand out, then it was maybe a good decision and fit with the look that they wanted. And, you know, that's what it stems from. If I feel like the people who made this film achieved the look that they wanted, as a filmmaker, you have to accept that that was their vision and that's what they went for. And I don't think that they went into this being like, oh, let's make it some crazy grand scheme sleuth movie. They went into it being like, I want to make my TV show longer, bigger, and reunite the cast and bring in the fans into this process.
And absolutely.
And not with that goal, I think it was accomplished.
And I think with their filming time span, they only had 23 to 28 days. Mm-hmm. We don't really know the exact amount of days. But do you think because they had a limited, condensed schedule that they had to do the easy setups in movies, that they didn't have the time to set up cameras to make it grand and elaborate?
Wait a minute. We talked about Dallas Buyers Club, okay? That movie was shot in a very tight schedule, very tight budget. And I'm going to say that Dallas Buyers Club looked better than Veronica Mars. The cinematography was there. When I saw it on the big screen, it looked like a movie. That's all I'm saying. You just make it look more like a movie. Dallas Buyers Club. What did we talk about the budget to that movie?
I don't remember the budget, but the shooting days is around 30 days.
It's around 30 days, and they use all digital camera.
Yeah, but Dallas Buyers Club had a completely different look. I do agree with that. But Veronica Mars shows has a very set look, and I think they owed it back to what the Veronica Mars show looked like. Every episode.
Also, it's the team. It's the team implied in the filmmaking. I mean, with Dallas Buyers Club, you're looking at directors, producers, cinematographers, who this is their style. That is what they want to do. Mm-hmm. With this team, you are bringing TV directors, TV writers, TV cinematographers. That's the style they know. That's what they love to do. So I think that probably plays a part into how things are shot and how they're looked at.
Then I will use Joss Whedon as my perfect example, who was a TV yes. director. Mm-hmm. He comes from TV. Okay, his first movie was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's not accurate.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'm finally going to jump in here for a little bit.
Come on, go ahead.
Let's start with where Joss began, which was Speed, Toy Story, the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
He was writing, but he wasn't directing.
But he began in film.
Right, but he wasn't directing.
He made a transition to television because he had no other choice with that property.
I agree, but I'm talking as a director. It's one thing to be writing. I didn't feel like necessarily that the writing was off on this movie. Like, it was smart. I thought the dialogue was good. Mm-hmm. But when Joss Whedon, he directed the first Buffy the Vampire Slayer yes. movie, yes. right? Then he went to TV. He directed a lot of TV.
Sure.
Okay. So he didn't bring those TV necessarily sensibilities when he started to make that go back into.
But when he,
had, back
when he made Serenity, his budget was $80, $90 million.
Yeah, well, I was just about to look that up.
And you also are dealing with a different concept. With Veronica Mars, you are dealing with a character that is the central theme of the show. Veronica right. is what the show revolves around. In Serenity, it's not just about Mal. It's about the whole team.
I understand.
So you approach things from a different standpoint. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people were thrown off in this film by you just getting little bits of Wallace. You're getting just little bits of Mac, and you're getting little bits of Keith. There mm-hmm. wasn't time to focus on any of them other than really the love shippers, Logan and Veronica. Oh, yeah. They really dominated the screen. But you would argue they dominated the show as well.
And that's the thing why they brought back Logan and stuff, because the chemistry between Veronica and Logan, no one could get enough of that. Them two together, they love their on-screen time together. And that was another driving point for this movie, to bring Logan back and have that storyline between the two characters.
And, like, even I felt that. And I did not know the relationship, and I think that right away, just from watching a lot of your TV, you can sense that. You can sense that this was the couple that perhaps everyone wanted to be together, but everyone knew that they couldn't because it was bad for them or whatnot. And they repaired that relationship. Right. They yeah. gave them a way and a function to be together, and for the fans not to be like, you're hurting yourself by having this relationship.
Sure.
They cleaned them up, they put them in a similar... They put their mentalities in place where mm-hmm. they could really be that couple.
And to your point, though, Serenity was $58 million, and that was total P&A in production. So it wasn't... So it wasn't
P&A,
90.
P&A.
But this is had, total budget was 58.
That
doesn't seem reasonable.
That's Universal didn't like pour a lot.
I want to jump in. I haven't seen Dallas Buyers Club. But
it's good. You should see it.
At some point, what I wanted to point out was even though studios report the budget of a film, it doesn't take into consideration what happens after they take delivery of the film.
Sure.
There could be mm-hmm. there could have been millions of dollars that they spent on post-production and cleaning the film up and making it more presentable. There was a very popular horror film that was released in the late 90s that was a huge viral hit online, and it became very popular, and we all laughed because of the shaky cam on it. The producers like to tout that it cost about $1 million to make, but the company that released it spent almost five times that amount actually making it releasable. So there's a lot of hype. Don't buy into the hype.
Okay.
That's all I got to say.
I want to talk about the writing of this show.
The movie played out.
How we got back to a movie, because when season 3 ended, I know a lot of fans were disappointed how it ended, because I certainly was. They had filmed the last episode expecting for season 4. They got the axe, unfortunately, and that's why fans were upset, because there was no resolution, especially how the last episode ended. That
cliffhanger?
Yeah, it was a cliffhanger mm-hmm. that Keith Mars, Veronica's father, he was up for an election for sheriff because he used to be sheriff, and then he got, he left the position due to storyline that happened, and then now there was a re-election to him having back in office, mm-hmm. back in that sheriff position, and we ended the episode with Veronica going in, voting for what we assume is her father, but we never got the results if Keith got the sheriff position and stuff like that. So we really didn't know how it ended. And conclusions, and even with Piz, with the boyfriend, mm-hmm. and like Veronica and Piz just started their relationship, and Logan was in a bad spot and having problems with Veronica. So they left a lot of storylines open, which made the fans unhappy how it ended, because we were expecting a whole nother season, all these storylines to wrap up. And I think that was another reason why so many fans wanted a movie to hopefully get those answers.
They wanted that culmination. They wanted...
Yeah. Oh, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, you know, you can't... No diss to the fan base at all. I mean, again, these are... A lot of them may have been like teenage girls. It's been 7 years. It's hard. You're hard earned money. And if somebody's going to pony up 10 grand, like, you know, again, you know, the person gets a walk on or whatever, but 10 grand, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of money. And, you know, $200, like, if you're a teenager to pony up to try to get in there and get all this stuff, I mean, so that's why I think that you'll look at this model and fans are willing to pony up. you know, some money to help on a budget on a film. And I think you don't necessarily have to restrict it. Like Veronica Mars shows that fandom can help if it's what they really want to see, like potentially maybe Farscape, which I didn't watch Farscape, but it had a solid, rabid fan base. And I'm sure they may like to see a movie version of their favorite television show. I think it's a great way to look at, you know, history and what we can do as fans, you know, when something ends somewhere. But I want one more. I want one more story to be told. Kickstarter proved that it can be done.
I think that's something I was definitely thinking about as this coming out. I was like, what is this going to spark? There are so many TV shows that don't make it past what people want them to. Like, I remember when Pushing Up Daisies was on, like, numerous. Mm-hmm. And will this open up a can of worms to all those TV shows that people, you know, really want? The problem is that actors do move on, and that's where this movie got really lucky. Mm-hmm. Really lucky, and obviously they had a really good connection with each other, being that a lot of them have moved on to have very big careers. They're busy, they're filming, and they wanted, and Kristen Bell was a very big advocate of getting this put together.
Yeah.
So that they had a group that was willing to come back and didn't seem to make too much of a fuss about it. Because you get so many TV shows where they're like, oh, we're going to have a reunion, and it's like one episode, and you have actors being like, I can't do it, like going crazy. Yeah. And those are for like big budget reunions that studios are funding. And it's like this had a cast that was so willing and so connected to their fans that they wanted to go out and do it for no budget.
Yes. And they had the cast and production crew. It just a testament to them that like they were just close, good friends with each other. Because even after Veronica Mars ended, there was another little show called Party Down, created by Rob Thomas. And like it had pretty much all the same people, the cast members, even Kristen Bell had a few recurring episodes. Like, everyone who was in Veronica Mars pretty much moved on to Party Down. Mm-hmm. And they were all together, and we still had the same people, and you still had that same chemistry and dynamic and friendships with each other, even though they were different characters. So it just goes to show, even after Veronica Mars ended, everyone still stayed relevantly close to each other.
Yeah.
So I think, but I think this was luck and good relationships versus I don't think it's going to be too much of a trend, because I don't think that we've seen it happen with a lot of actors. They've done everything from like Full House reunions to Saved by the Bell to Friends to whatnot, and I think we see that constantly that causes a lot of trouble and a lot of rifts and a lot. So I was very impressed with this crew and this show that they were able to pull it together for a movie.
But again, I'll reference like Serenity again. Joss put together like Nathan Fillion. He put together a bunch of good actors, and they all, obviously Alan Tudyk, they all got along together. So when it came time to revisit this, not one of them complained. And they all, like, again, I'll put it to this cast. When the publicity for Veronica Mars was coming out, I don't think there was one cast member, you might know because you were getting these updates, that made themselves unavailable to say, hey, Veronica Mars is coming out. Go see it at the theater. We're very happy, and we joked along. I saw some of the videos, probably not as much as you, but they all seemed – it was like a family reunion. Forget a television show. It was a family reunion. They all had fun. You know, and that you can tell by watching this movie. You know, you could tell that there was a camaraderie that – in a lot of cases, and making a movie is rare. So, but like you probably got to see a lot of that more so than, you know, did you see on-set videos? And
they were providing things during the course of the campaign, and then actually into production. In fact, it even started before the campaign began. There was a viral clip that they sent out where they were at Kristen's house, and Ryan Hansen was sitting there on the couch eating cereal, and Eriko walks in from the bathroom, and they're all just sort of talking about, hey, we're about to do this campaign, why don't you contribute, and we can get us all back together. During production, you were getting updates from everybody, there would be little video clips. I think even one of the backer awards was Kristen's creating a little video just for you, where she would reach out to you, and everybody seemed to be a part of it. And I think the Joss connection is a good one because he has a stable that he seems to work with as well.
Sure.
And maybe it's that's the issue, is that you need a showrunner that has that personality and brings that right group of people together, people would care about this. And it works with this show because it's not – I was thinking about this earlier. There was no single episode in the show that I remember that resonated with me the way, say, The Best of Both Worlds would.
Okay.
Or Hush or right. Once More with Feeling mm-hmm. or 33, the seminal episodes that you just –
The standalone.
Correct. Yeah. And with this show, it's one long story about a bunch of characters interacting with mysteries thrown in. And that's what the movie felt like. It was one long movie with a bunch of characters and a mystery that was sort of tacked on.
And that was the overall thing of Veronica Mars. Each episode had their own one individual mm-hmm. crime or whatever mystery.
Case.
Yeah, case that was going on. But the whole series, or like at least half, like the first half of the season one had a big storyline. Right. The second half had a different storyline, but every episode had an individual case that Veronica.
Right.
So yeah. My question for you two specifically is, because like I really enjoyed the case of this, this drama thriller. Like to me, it seemed very reasonable. But I remember thinking about halfway through, I was like, I wonder if this all seems realistic to the people who watched the show, the relationships that mm-hmm. founded, the fact that a lot of people continued to have relationships with people that they went to high school with, that someone became a teacher, that one of them had died, like all of that, did those all add up in a positive light for you as a TV Veronica Mars fan?
I felt like we got a lot of, I guess you can say, closure on some of the characters. Mm-hmm. Like Weevil, we didn't know how he ended up. But then we found out he became a family man. He got married. He had a kid.
Supposedly.
He's clean. Yeah. Because back in the seasons, he was a bad boy. He was the leader of the bike gang and some motorcycle club and stuff like that. So, like, he had a really dark past. And he was in and out of
Did all of their endings seem reasonable? Like, did you?
I think so.
Like, you felt like that was like true to where their character was going.
Honestly, the one that sort of surprised me the most was Logan mm-hmm. joining the Navy or the Air Force.
Navy.
Yeah. I agree.
That
because especially how he ended season three, that he was that bad boy, always getting into fights and stuff.
Correct, mm-hmm. And it was, I suppose, as a storytelling tool, it was good because it gave you that funny moment when he met her at the airport. And then it gave her sort of a natural way for him to exit out of the story at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. But everybody else seemed to be about where you expected them to be.
What about the whole pop star angle mm-hmm. and their relationship? Did that seem accurate? Like, was that because to me, I was like, wow, this is quite the high school to have all of this going on.
It's very high school. The thing with Carrie Bishop, the character, originally played by Leighton Meester, the actress, she had a two-episode character arc mm-hmm. in the first season of Veronica Mars, where her character was suing one of Veronica Mars' favorite teacher for sleeping with her.
Right.
And Veronica Mars, figures out the case, cracks it, and it was the teacher sleeping with her friend, not Carrie. It was Carrie's friend.
Right.
So even though Carrie was saying that the teacher slept with her. So just having, and knowing Leighton Meester back then, and now she had the popular show mm-hmm. Gossip Girl, and then watching this movie and hearing Carrie Bishop's name, I was like, I know the name, but I don't recognize the face.
Did it make sense that she was a pop star?
Yeah, and that's what threw me off, because the name was so recognizable, but I didn't recognize the face. True. And that the fact that they started this whole storyline, she became a pop singer, I was like, okay, where did they go with this character?
True.
Yeah. I got confused with her.
Yeah, because I just found that very interesting. And like for me, looking up like the actress who originally played, I was like, oh, Leighton Meester, I am very recognized to like her name because of Gossip Girl. So I honestly kind of assumed that she had a leading role. And I was a little like thrown back because I was like, how did this arc come about? That being said, I thought it was fun. I think that my favorite scene in the entire movie, I'm kind of skipping around here, was that because I think that mystery really culminated when she gets shot through the window
mm-hmm.
and she falls down and Gia gets shot. And I thought that was just shocking. I thought that was a very big like switch for me in the film. It became a little bit darker. It became that thriller part.
See, and to me, I just saw that coming like a mile away. Oh, he lives in the apartment complex way across, like right across the street from me. Oh, I've got these really big windows, which, by the way, he doesn't allow me to put curtains on. I'm like, oh, so why don't you just stand by the window to let him shoot you? Bang. I was like,
I don't know. I really liked that shot, though.
I didn't see that coming. I saw it coming.
I mean, I might have saw it coming, but it was still like shocking. And like, I thought it was just done well. I don't know. I liked it.
I think it was interesting how they showed both of the deaths that would happen in the sense. Because the first one, we find out about it. It already happened.
Right.
And then the second one, we see an actual death. Mm-hmm. So just the two different deaths in this movie.
Did people die on the television series?
Some people did die. And then there was also, I mean, there was a few action kind of moments in this movie with the car crash with Veronica's father, because the sheriff department's all corrupted now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we find out, apparently, that he didn't get sheriff. And then this asshole comes in and the whole... corrupted the whole police department.
To be fair, the two choices that were available that day were Keith and then the private detective that was in the van at Santa Monica Pier, Vinny Van Lo. Okay. Those were
the
two choices.
With the dancing monkey.
So he was the other. So he probably won, and that's probably what started everything down this road.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
So even those... storylines that weren't wrapped up. So we got a little bit of that, or what kind of happened years later. The fact that Keith didn't get it, but the reason why Veronica Mars came back to hopefully clean up the corruption in the city that's now going on.
So did they, going back to the killing off, like, were there deaths, did they kill off main characters? Mm-hmm. So to speak,
a big, like, with the big character arcs, they did kill off some people, but like a couple main characters just left because of their storylines and stuff. Duncan Cain, who was big in season one and half of season two, he left with a child and left the show. So there were other big characters that were part of the show that we didn't even see in tonight's episode. Right.
Tonight's episode. See, that's a problem.
On a very special episode of Veronica Mars.
Movie.
But I mean, I thought I enjoyed it. I know that while watching the movie, while I could take it as like this plot and these characters, and it was easy to accept them, they set it up like pretty well. Like, there was a lot, obviously, that they had to cover for the audience that wasn't part of the TV show. Like, and they did it. They did it pretty quickly.
Yeah, the exposition was. Not being familiar with the show, I caught on quick. And did she also use the overvoice in the show? I was hoping for maybe a little bit more in that in the movie because I did find that the detective, the gumshoe overvoice, the exposition, I felt that brought me up to speed. And I knew it, as a non-fan, I knew what I needed to know to get me through the movie. And I also figured I may not enjoy this as much as you two because you're going to notice the Easter eggs that you brought up and all these different things. Yep. But again, the main point is, when you're going to do a feature like this, you have to bring in the non-fans and make them like it. So you can't be so much, you know, so fan intensive. But I was able to follow the movie without knowing how some of the dots like connected. So I thought the exposition worked in that regard. And so for me, it was fine. It didn't bother me so much.
And, you know, and I have to give it to this movie. The exposition was actually executed in a little different way than what we were used to in Veronica Mars. Each episode, Veronica Mars was always the one giving how she solved the case, and she was always usually giving the exposition. And then in this movie, it was Gia that was explaining how everything went down. Veronica Mars put the pieces together, but Gia was the one that explained it all.
Okay, all right, I understand.
And I thought that they did that really well, because the whole time, as she started talking, I was like, I just wasn't sure. I was like, really? What's his name? Dick?
Dick.
I was like, there's no way Dick's hid the secret for this long. I was like, this has to be explained, or it's going to be a big hole in the script for me. So I like that she made him pass out. Sorry, that was just a side note.
But, you know, it was very true to Dick's character, because Dick in the show, he was very playboy, kind of always sleeping with people, always partying, always getting drunk. He was that guy. Mm-hmm. And to see his character hasn't changed at all, I found that actually entertaining, because we see all the other characters, they grow up and mature. But Dick is still the same person.
Yeah, the one constant in that world. Yeah. For me, that was probably the most enjoyable moments in the movie, were when he was on scene, just because it was so funny. But He's useful because he mm-hmm. propels things forward with his information.
And comedic character in this movie as well, because he was the comedic character in the show.
I think that they gave the aura of a lot of the characters off very well, because like I caught on to that. I got that he was the comedic. I kind of felt like I knew who, like, Gio was in the story of the, like, I felt like that was very easy to grasp, which to me was fun. I also really enjoyed the music in this film, and I know that that was recalled from the series. They used theme songs. And I thought that was balanced, and as a, just as the movie viewer, I liked those components.
Yeah, and I did love the little references back to the show that a lot of people might overlook, like, There were many instances when Veronica's hiding under the cupboard and stuff. That there's an episode where she's like, I'm small and I'm petite, but it does come in handy. Because she is such a small person in real life that she can fit under cupboards to get away and hide from the people who are after her in each case when she's trying to, like, go undercover and stuff like that. Just those little things. And then there was another moment where, because Keith and Veronica, they're like, oh, we have to get this file. And they're pretending that there's someone who they're not, just to get information. They did that a lot in the show. And Veronica Mars having that, tricking that one lady that she's a still photographer for the location scout and whatnot. Just like, because Veronica Mars would make up all these situations just to get into a place.
And the
accents,
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Because those were playing a prominent role.
She did a lot of phone calls with different voices to get information from people over the phone. So just those little things that they brought back for this movie, people who watched the show would understand and appreciate.
And there was a really great meta moment when she's meeting with Max Greenfield's character, the police detective. Where they make a reference to a long-standing...
Leo.
They make a reference to a long-standing rumor of how they were going to reboot the show by making her a FBI agent later, and they have a sort of tongue-in-cheek conversation about that.
Another life, I believe.
Yeah. It was... Mm-hmm. That was hysterical, but it required you to actually know that Thomas had been pitching her becoming an FBI agent later.
But the good news
is the line still worked. The line still worked because it's a reasonable conclusion that got off the exposition from the beginning of the film.
Didn't need to know. Like, again, if you're throwing into the fans, that, but again, the banter that they had, it worked. It was a fine line and all that. So yeah, the exposition worked for us non-fans. it perpetuated the story. You know, I get it for a fan that you can get it and snicker at it and go, that's funny.
Yeah. So. I want to talk about just the recurring cast, because I know you, Dimitri, didn't really watch the show, but they did have a lot of people come back for a film. I mean, even if it was 1 or 2 seconds on screen, I loved the fact that they had that manpower to get people back just for that. And it was... the fans of the show can appreciate them just to see them, you know, fresh faces again. A nice small reunion. I mean, we got Mac. Mac was
small
back.
Small reunion.
We
it was got, a giant high school reunion.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But we got Mac, one of Veronica's best friends. We had Percy Daggs, who plays
Wallace.
And I was kind of upset they didn't use Wallace as much, because it was usually Wallace and Veronica, like, teaming up and getting information together for Veronica Mars to figure out cases, day-to-day cases. So, but it was nice to see Wallace's character, because he was a big basketball player, and now he's a teacher still at the same school, but also the assistant basketball coach. Just, like, seeing the friends come back in that way was fun.
Yeah. And I felt like that click was very established. I think one of the fun parts of this is also, I think, for watching these actors, where I think a lot of them got their start coming back together, and then you're like, oh, and they are very recognizable now, and that is through the entire cast, which I think, to me, I knew so many of the actors outside of this, so it was interesting being like, oh, this is where they all started, and how fun to be able to get back into that rhythm. And I think there was even a line in there like, getting back into the, oh, I can't even remember. Kristen, it was one of Kristen Bell's lines, and she's just like, getting back into the normal rhythm of things. And I was just, I
rolling around in the mud.
And I was like, and you could feel the accuracy of that. And I think that everyone had a great time.
Yeah. I just like the Dax Shepard cameo.
I love that.
What that means to Kristen Bell.
So funny. Because as we know, Dax Shepard is married to Kristen Bell in real life. They met together on another movie, Men in Rome, got married, and like started dating, got married, had a kid after that, and so just having that was really fun, and
the cameos
from a lot of people. There was
James Franco
who
James Franco surprised me. Was he ever in the show, or was that just a
No, he wasn't. I think that was just
like, how did he do that?
Kristen Bell pulling, you know, her strings to, you know, her ways of just getting big names. Also, Jamie Lee Curtis was in this.
Morange. You know, and it was nice to see Jamie Lee Curtis.
Actually, guys, just to throw it out, I know I've disappeared from the screen, but
How did James Franco
ended up on this film was that it was through an email. And it was just basically through the fact that James Franco was known to do some crazy projects. He had never watched the show. It was a random email that he responded to within 5 minutes, which had the whole script to it. And he was just excited. They told him he was going to do two funny scenes. And without really even having to think too hard about it, he was like, this sounds like fun. I'm on board. So, although I assumed it was Kristen Bell as well, you know, using celebrity connections. But nope, I believe it was either the writer or director reached out just through a simple email, and there you go.
It's pretty cool.
Nice. Cameo performance.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. On that note, Sarah leaves.
Thank you, Sarah. So, yes, but the nice cameos throughout for everybody I thought was fun.
Yeah.
So, and you know, let's get into the overall look. I know, Dimitri, you said you wanted a more theatrical version, but I do have to give it to the cinematographer. I believe his name was I'm butchering his last name.
It's all right.
But
Cutchins, Ben Cutchins.
That's it. I kind of combined the two there. Ben Cutchins, who has worked on other movies, like I don't know if you saw the movie Art of Getting By, but it had this. I felt like this Veronica Mars movie had the same look as that. The very harsh blues, very warm yellows and oranges and stuff. But the Veronica Mars shows had that.
Yeah.
That was the overall look for Veronica Mars. The two big different color palettes.
Yeah. I was comparing the episodes to the movies over the past 24 hours, and you could see a lot of similarities in the way the camera moves, the composition. Obviously, it was a different aspect ratio they were working with on this film.
Hello. Hi. Hey there.
And it did have a bigger look. I understand where Dimitri's coming from with the idea that it still has a kind of television look to it. There are films you can instantly look at and see the idea of big cinema. You know, the great cinematographers with the big lenses and the dramatic lighting. And you get a little of that here, but I'm not really sure if that was what this film needed. And I know where you're coming from. I'm kind of circling back around to what you were talking about earlier. I wrestled very heavily with this film because I live in a weird world, being both on the studio side as my day job and then being a backer and a fan of this show. And at the end of the day, I don't know how I feel about this process. It really makes me uncomfortable in some respects because we could spend hours and hours and hours talking about the economics and the business behind this process, but it's a story, and at the end of the day, I got the story that I wanted. And I don't think changing the cinematography would have changed the story for me at all. That's why I show up. That's why I wanted to watch this movie. That's why I wanted to support it, was that I believed in the story. And I don't know. I don't know if having a better cinematographer, a better look would have changed that.
Well,
also adds to the show because the cinematography was very simple in that. I mean, granted, it is a TV show. They usually have condensed schedules. Mm-hmm. They pull out episodes every 8 days. So they're used to that. Mm-hmm. And I think that reflected the movie as well because...
But you yourself just called it an episode not too long ago. But, maybe that was a Freudian slip.
It probably was because I do another network called AfterBuzz TV where we recap episodes every night. So, but the movie had the same beats as the episodes of Veronica Mars did because they had to be simple enough to understand one big case every episode.
I understand and I get that, and you know, I'm just going to take it from, I'm going to paraphrase this article that I found on, and it says Veronica Mars in the case of the totally adequate Kickstarter movie. Now, this is a gentleman who saw the movie at a Manhattan movie theater on Friday night. My guess is it was an AMC theater. The fact that this movie exists at all is kind of amazing, and I agree with that statement. It was, as I hinted when I wrote about the Kickstarter campaign a year ago, I was a fan of the canceled TV show and its eponymous high school detective who solved crimes. More broadly, I'm the kind of nerd who can get obsessed with canceled shows. I think the three of us here, and I'm sure Sarah attested to that. Mm-hmm. We're all like that. Phil, what about you? Canceled shows, you're still a fan of?
Yeah.
Okay. So all of us here of Anatomy of a Movie, including our special guests, we can feel that way on certain canceled shows. Huh. Okay, this post isn't meant to be a review. It's mostly an attempt to explain my own disappointment. I mean, the movie was fine, I guess. The actors seemed to slip into their odd roles quite comfortably, which is what we're saying. The dialogue was, for the most part, as sharp and snappy as I remember it. A little more disappointing where the movie's TV-ish look and the central mystery, which fizzled out after an intriguing start. But those shortcomings were understandable given the constraints, the budget constraints to our runtime. Then he goes, what really drove my disappointment was the sense of the filmmakers were looking over my shoulder in every scene asking, this is what you wanted, isn't it? Isn't it? And this is from a fan who obviously have written about this. And then he goes on and said, hey, Veronica Mars, Rob Thomas, he goes, he said that since fan dollars brought Veronica Mars back to life, he turned the movie into a love letter to the fans, putting all that stuff he thought they would want, which I appreciate.
Okay, so pretty much you're agreeing with this article saying that it did have a TV look to it, even though it was released in theaters.
Hey.
And as so, would you agree with that?
That
the fan who wrote that article, he thought the overall look of the movie looked like a TV show.
Yeah, it looked like a TV show. But he goes on and says, putting all that stuff, I do think a movie aimed squarely at fans is exactly what he made, for better or for worse. And do you agree with that?
Yes.
I mean, again, not being a fan, you know, I could catch the glimpses that what he was doing.
Sure.
Much like watching Serenity, I can catch what he was doing and throwing things in and little Easter eggs. So, sure. But he goes, and shouldn't that be enough? Even if, as I believe, Veronica the movie isn't nearly as good as Veronica Mars the TV show, isn't that okay? Isn't it still a good thing that Thomas, along with the cast and crew, got to tell one more story? Isn't that what fans wanted, what they paid for? It's a mystery, and I'm not sure it's the kind that Veronica Mars can solve. And you know, I'm getting what this guy, you know, you might be, I'm getting what he's saying at. And as a non-initiated person, my problem was that it looked too much like TV. It didn't necessarily bring me in the way I wanted to, even though I could recognize the bits of sharp dialogue. I liked Kristen Bell, and I can see how she's must have been great in the show. Sure. But everybody got along great. There's not one actor or actress I could even point to say that person didn't hold their weight in this movie. They all seem to do this as a love letter. I'm just saying, as a movie fan, I find this to be a great experiment. And I think studios can learn from this. I'm curious about your fears about this, because we've said it on the show, distribution patterns because of digital are changing immensely. Yeah. And this was the first feature to be released under the Warner Brothers Digital banner. It wasn't necessarily just the big old WB. Right. It said Warner Brothers Digital. So I'm just saying, I think that this was a fascinating experiment. It proves that fandom can fuel and grab people's attention. Mm-hmm. I just want maybe next time a studio to recognize that a little more and say, there's something here. Why don't we kick in a little bit more money? And it didn't have to be a 1,200, 1,500, 2,000 release movie. Make it 500 to 1,000. Make it 1,000 locations. Don't limit it to the 200-plus AMC theaters that you have.
Right.
Get the Regal, get Regal theaters, because a lot of theater chains, most of your main chains, have a hardline policy that if it's going to debut day and date on VOD, we're not playing it in our theaters. So branch out. Get the Marcus theaters.
Get more.
Regal, Cinemark, Carmike.
Get more coverage.
Get
my,
a little
my
more
question
coverage.
To you. Okay. The Serenity show, you keep bringing up Serenity and Firefly. What was the time difference between the show ending and then the movie coming out? Was it shorter than the Veronica Mars
shorter.
Time span?
I would 3 to 4 years.
I would say it was about 4 or 5. Yeah.
Okay. So
that.
Veronica Mars had the 7-year gap. Do you think that hindered that at all?
No, not for me, because I didn't see the show. And you know what? It doesn't seem to hinder it for you. Everybody seemed to feel comfortable slipping back into those roles.
Yeah, where I'll jump in then at this point is what concerns me about this process is the very thing that gave me a sense of pride. I cared about this character. I cared about the property enough that I was willing to contribute money to see another story with it. That being said, I also know the business side of it, and the business side of me gets kind of angry. I get kind of angry about this process. Besides the fact that I don't care about this person's criticism unless he says I was a Kickstarter campaign.
Which he was.
He was?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's interesting. All right. Well, I'll amend that then. If someone has a problem with this, my initial reaction is to go, well, you know, you weren't there at the beginning anyway, so, you know, whatever. That being said, what really concerns me about this process is that Warner Brothers is going to make money off of this.
Mm-hmm.
Warner Brothers is going to profit off of this. And I feel like I'm part of the reason why they're making money beyond what they would normally make when I would buy a ticket. Because I understand that my box office dollar goes into their coffers. And I know when I buy an iTunes download or when I watch it on television and my ratings go in and it affects the sales of how they make their money off of it. I feel like Warner Brothers didn't do anything here.
I agree, because Warner Brothers weren't really with them at the beginning of this movie. They're like, prove it, you know?
Yeah.
And then after they realized they got money, then they started to be like, okay, maybe we should show Veronica Mars some attention.
And thank you for beefing up my argument, because that's what I said from the beginning. Had Warner Brothers shown a little more TLC, because they didn't really do anything. The only thing, they put the onus on Rob Thomas and Kristen Bell, and they said, oh, really, Veronica Mars? Prove it. And so they did the Kickstarter, and they proved it.
No,
but Warner Brothers
didn't do much. I can understand why Warner Brothers didn't throw in a lot of money, but for the budget that they had, it still didn't bother me that it didn't overall look theatrical.
I will also join the other side of this equation and say none of this would have happened had people at the CW or was it UPN at the point when this
UPN,
started?
It was that far back.
It started on UPN. And Warner Brothers was involved since it was a Silver production. That meant that it was under the Warner Brothers label. Warner Brothers helped develop it and got it onto the air, and it ran on the air because of Warner Brothers. So Warner Brothers, I also want to thank you for giving us this story in the first place.
Well, it was originally WB, and then Warner Brothers and UPN merged, and the last season it was aired technically on CW.
Was there a particular, I mean, pardon me, because this may be like, you know, all right, most reasons shows get canceled is because of ratings. Mm-hmm. Was that the sole factor for the show getting canceled? Yeah. Was there not?
The last season averaged probably 2.5, I believe, million throughout the whole season, which is actually pretty good numbers for CW. It's a smaller number.
Absolutely.
But I know Rob Thomas was trying to go a different route with Veronica Mars. They mentioned he wanted Veronica Mars as a new kind of FBI route that this was like her first year as an FBI, and then like different storylines, like a completely different thing, because we were to take a different way.
Yeah, I think that generally.
And then WB gave, CW gave the axe at that time.
Yeah, they got trapped into the college model. They graduated from high school, and then
where do we go from here?
Yeah, they get to college, and it just loses steam when that happened, which is why they wanted to move it forward, which is good.
Yeah.
It's so, all right. So, but can I, despite what you're saying, can I say it was a little bit more than just ratings? They, like, CW maybe didn't want to go that route.
I'm pretty sure when it all came down, it was cost versus what
cost
they
were. Benefit. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, you know, all right. So we had this movie, Veronica Mars. It opened up on March 14th. Mm-hmm. Okay. Warner Brothers distributed it. It was a Warner Brothers Digital, in fact, first time ever for that label. Our production budget is like, say, $6 million. I don't have a total, so I don't know what was put into P&A on this. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a mystery as to what type of prints and advertising. Now, I will say this, the marketing team put together a really good poster. Yeah. I mean, I liked that poster with Veronica Mars. It had that blue, almost noirish look. Another reason why I was fascinating about this movie, I love detective movies. And if you can get a female character detective movie, you know.
See, really I love shows with strong female characters. All my favorite shows have strong female characters. Sure. Buffy, Charmed, Veronica Mars, and hell, even Criminal Minds have a bunch of female strong characters. Yeah. So, like, I loved that. I think that what's helped me like Veronica Mars at first, because I was like, oh my god, this is a more modern day Nancy Drew.
Absolutely, yeah. Was that ever referenced?
Nancy Drew.
Did Rob Thomas say, I wanted to make a Nancy Drewish, but modern day?
Yeah, the thing with Veronica Mars is like, she tells off all of her bullies, all of the people that don't like her and call her a bitch and stuff.
Right.
She has the audacity to like just call them out and not really care. And I was like, I wish I was like that.
Yeah,
no, I can't say that to the people who didn't like me. So.
And I totally, and again,
that's what appealed to me.
And I understand that. And I see by watching, you know, I sort of like that type of a character as well. You know, its opening weekend gross domestically was $1.9 million, which, again, when you're on 291 locations, that's a pretty
good
high per screen average. In fact, they were saying the only thing to beat it was the Grand Budapest Hotel. So, you know, the total domestic gross to date is 2.3, I'm going to say. It could be a little bit, give or take.
Yeah. This movie has been out for a week now.
One week. And if my research is correct, they're going to be at 347 locations this weekend, which will be an interesting, it'll be interesting because we have two movies coming out, one a potential blockbuster in Divergent. We got the Muppet movie, which is a family-based movie. But it would be interesting to see how it floats in those waters. Now, on Rotten Tomatoes, it got a 76% rating. Now, that's fresh. That means, you know, most of the critics, a majority of, you know, the nation's critics really enjoyed the movie. And, you know, it's a good sign for the movie, you know, as far as, you know, as a movie goes. In fact, it's even higher at this point than Divergent is if you're looking at Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. That's why I say they seem to have made a good movie. If Warner Brothers showed it that DLC that the fans did and they equaled it, box office wise, you know, you're right. They were going to make money on it. They took little to very no risk. I mean, again, I don't know what their P&A, their prints and advertising costs were. And they only made, like, you know, you were talking about the shirt and how Warner Brothers ended up taking because they get better deals. Yeah. And so they really, again, I just want other studios to look at this and say, hey, if we give this a little TLC, we don't have to go the VOD route. What I would love to know is what the ratio is of fans who paid to go see it in a movie theater as opposed to those who watched it on their tablet or at home and paid $8 or whatever, however much it cost. Right. That'd be an interesting fact.
I, as a fan, I watched it twice at home. I rented it twice. So in total, it was probably the average ticket of one movie theater had I gone. I'm just so busy. I had to watch it at home.
Right.
And, but I don't think that really, I mean, I guess it can matter, but like it shows fans are going to watch it either way. Mm-hmm. They're, If they have time, they're going to go to the theaters. If they don't, they're going to watch on VOD.
And that's a problem with me.
But in this instance, this ties into the uncertainty that Warner Brothers had with the distribution. The whole point of the original campaign was they weren't even thinking they were going to get a theatrical campaign. Mm-hmm. That was sort of like the reason why digital download was one of the primary backer gifts.
That which we should incentive. Talk. We should talk about digital download because mm-hmm. there's a little bit of controversy sure. with that. But please,
yeah.
So I just want to keep that in the back of my head too.
The thinking there was that the film wasn't going to be playing everywhere. Fans are all over the place. And then there was actually further detail that went into how it was handled internationally with distribution because it was so complicated to have to deal with that. But they didn't think they were going to have theatrical. And then when they started to realize that maybe there was going to be enough momentum to get theatrical, they still realized that not everybody's going to have access to a movie theater that has this. So that's why there was the simultaneous availability. To your point, I agree that it probably did detract away from the theatrical release. But then I shift back to my position, which was kind of made this movie for me. You know?
What kind of made the movie for you?
The people who made the filmmakers. They made this movie for us.
Yeah, right. I felt yeah. like this was a passion project. And yeah. also being released in mostly the AMC chains. AMC's usually only available in metropolis cities. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people mm-hmm. who are fans, like myself, from a small city, they're going to have to go an hour away to go to AMC. So if they're, because if they're from small towns, yeah. they're going to probably watch it at home. And so I like the fact that they released it on video on demand as well.
Yeah, but again, given the opportunity, had they opened it up at a Marcus Theater around here or someplace, you know, another theater chain, you know, had it got the Regal backing, had it got Cinemark backing, had it got these other chains, you know, again,
you could jump in and present the argument that, do you know if the theatrical team that was at Warner Brothers when this film began production was the one that was running theatrical? Because you know what happens when you have regime changes.
Oh, absolutely.
These things get lost.
You know, but again, it's just my point of all of this is to have a VOD release cuts away from the theatrical. I was actually very surprised that it was AMC that did this because they're not normally a chain that will release a movie that's coming out on VOD. Mm-hmm. Now, AMC, I applaud them because they have a great independent program. But I was surprised that they were on board on releasing a movie, you know, because most chains just don't do it. They want people to come in and spend money for the box office. And I there's something inside me that says there may have been some money left on the table where, you know, if you're watching it on TV, and again, my point goes to, we shouldn't be watching movies on an iPad. We shouldn't be, like, unless it was made strictly directly to video, which there are some movies that mm-hmm. that's exactly what they're for, but this wasn't the case here. Get fans involved. Get the studios to take notice. Give it, and then you'll have your three-month window.
I
get it out there.
Even though I am and work in the industry, in this instance, I don't care that money was left on the table. I don't
care
either. And I don't. Also, to me, I wasn't expecting this film when it was being made and when it was leading up to the release that it was all of a sudden going to initiate a huge amount of marshmallows that were never part of the process before. Didn't see that. That's not why I did this. It's not why.
No, but you're a fan. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like you want to get people interested in Veronica Mars and maybe they'll go buy the DVDs. Maybe they'll, like, again, I'm thinking this is what I want out of this. I don't want to just make a movie that could potentially just be a one-off and then it's a one and a done. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know how it'll play out. I don't know if there will ever be a sequel. If there is a sequel, I'd be interested to see how it plays out. Sure. You would want a sequel, wouldn't you, as
a
fan?
I would want a sequel.
Right. So,
because I feel like how they ended the movie and how they brought Veronica Mars. She left her mm-hmm. her new life to come back to Neptune to clean up the corruption that's now happening. It makes the fans know, like, oh, she's back to her old ways. Sure. What is she going to do? What are the new cases she's going to deal with?
Now, that's an interesting. You brought up something else interesting because something else that I read was there's controversy about the ending. There's controversy about the ending because people, what's the name of the boyfriend we saw her with at the beginning?
Piz.
Yeah. All right.
Piznarski.
They liked those two together. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be a good evolution. Veronica Mars's life seem to be on this track and where she could have this lawyer position. And what one person said is she just ends up going back and she's rolling in the mud. And she poor Pez, because what did he ever do? Piz, I'm sorry. Pez, I didn't mean to call him a candy dispenser. But poor Piz. But again, I felt bad. Of all the people that I sympathize with the most, I did sympathize with Piz.
Sure.
I really did.
I mean, I think you're going to feel bad for Piz anyways. But I think Piz's character wasn't as fully developed as Logan's was.
True.
Piz came in season 3, the last season. And then Veronica and Piz didn't finally start getting together until the last few episodes.
That's fantastic.
So they
as
didn't have that time to build that chemistry that Veronica and Logan had. So I can understand why they brought Logan back to rehash that.
Logan was a fantastic plot device to get Veronica Mars back to Neptune.
True.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm saying as a movie fan, you know, as a movie and a plot person who's going to look at a script, what would have necessarily been the bad thing had she gone back to New York? If anything, as a PI, having a lawyer background, like you're the Lincoln lawyer in a sense. Well, what's wrong with having a lawyer background and then you can, you know, something brings you back
The other character in this movie is Veronica and then Neptune. Neptune is the other.
Right.
Neptune's the other character in the story. It's so complicated of a world. New York is great, but the story is her and Neptune as a detective.
And I don't disagree. Yeah. I'm not saying you keep her out of Neptune.
Sure.
But she can grow as a character. Mm-hmm. And what the criticism said is, like, she never grew. She never grew as a character. She just went back to Neptune to become back to this
old ways.
It's a tragedy. It's the tragedy of the situation. She could have grown, but she gets pulled back just like everybody else gets pulled back into their bad habits.
Pull me back.
Yeah. Like Weevil. You're like, this is great. And then
he goes back to his motorcycle gang.
You didn't do the Kickstarter, so you didn't get a digital download, but you got the digital download.
Did.
Were you part of the, because the other controversy is apparently a bunch of the fans who got the digital download were unable to download it digitally.
Sure.
Did you have an issue? And with your experience in digital assets,
what happened? This is a complicated thing. I had to think long and hard about this. I did the campaign. I got my what's called Ultraviolet. Ultraviolet is a distribution system. It's not even a commerce place like Walmart or iTunes. It's simply an aggregator that holds movies. And then other companies will then sell the film, but they'll feed off of this centralized server location that has hundreds and thousands of movies in it. So where I think people had problems with this process is that Ultraviolet's not something that's very popular compared to iTunes. iTunes has, I want to say it's close to 700 million. It's huge. Ultraviolet has about 15 million people that are using it presently. So people are going, well, why are you making me use this system that we've never used before? No one's using. I don't understand it.
So it was not on iTunes at all.
It is.
It was also on Amazon as well.
There's a million ways you can get it. But the Kickstarter backers got a redemption code that allowed us to get the movie. That was one of the things that was a premium in
there.
But we were limited specifically to using Ultraviolet.
Oh, okay.
And why people are having a problem with this is that it's cumbersome, it's not intuitive, it's not polished like iTunes.
And
iTunes
is so new.
It's very new. Most people don't know about it or don't know how to use it, so it was a real shock getting up Friday morning, seeing this thing and going, well, what the heck is Ultraviolet? I was aware of it before, so I had an account already. There's a very simple reason why this happened. And I don't want to get into too many trade specifics. Essentially, Warner Brothers makes more money this way. Because the amount of money they have to pay Ultraviolet is this much, and the amount of money that they had to pay iTunes, my hand's not big enough to get into it. It's you know, this versus this.
Right.
It's just, it was economics. They went, we're going to make more money if we don't go the expensive route.
So, I mean, is it safe to say that you're saying that it was more user error, or was there an actual technical glitch? Did it blow up the system? Did it crash the system?
That setup wasn't fairly executed well.
There's scaling that they're accustomed. This may have been something that was unique in the process, but I really think it was just people weren't familiar with the system, and it's not intuitive. It took me a couple tries to figure out how to do it, and this is what I do for a living.
Was the movie available the day of release, mm-hmm. a day before release? Yeah. It was Friday. You got a
voucher.
Got a voucher. That's mm-hmm. here you go.
I mean, you guys got the ultraviolet version. I watched it on mm-hmm. Amazon.
Sure.
And I'm you can call me old fashioned. I love movies on DVD because I had to technically stream it online. Sure. Right. I had buffering issues mm-hmm. both times I played it because I rented it twice.
Sure.
Do you have that good? But so reasons like that, buffering and streaming problems. Mm-hmm. I wish I had gone to the theater to see it too, like fully enjoy that just movie look. Mm. But in the end, I still enjoyed.
Was it not unknown? You don't have to name your cable company, but was it not on demand on whatever cable company you may have? Because
I didn't look.
Because I know it's on DirecTV.
Sure.
Like DirecTV has, and you can hit a button, play it now.
I didn't watch it on DirecTV. I watched it on Amazon.
Oh, okay. But I didn't know if you noticed, like, I don't know if you have DirecTV or Time Warner.
I'm on Time Warner Cable. I didn't look yet. So that's a good question, though.
Yeah, because I do know that it was on DirecTV's.
Mm-hmm. My challenge to you guys: go to the movies, watch it on DirecTV, watch it on Ultraviolet, mm-hmm. watch it on Amazon. See which one was better.
See which one you have easier getting the content on, you know? So,
or if you enjoy the movie in different ways.
Sure.
Like, was one better than the other? Did you get more out of each experience?
All right. You said you've seen it 1.5 times?
No, I saw it twice on Amazon.
Okay, and you've seen
it. I saw it in the theater the preview night, and then I watched pretty much all of it on Ultraviolet last night.
When was preview night?
Last Thursday.
Oh,
last Thursday. Sorry.
Did they do it, what was it, like a 7 o'clock show, something like
that? It was 8 p.m. I saw it at the AMC in Century City.
Nice. Did they give you a badge or anything?
There was a lanyard and a badge that was sort of looking like the badge you would wear at the high school reunion.
Oh, nice.
And then there was a t-shirt with the Pirates logo on it.
Right. Now, see, and again, I'm going to say, you know, if you branched out, like, think of the theater promotions that you could do more and get people to spend, instead of, say, a $10 ticket, say, hey, for $15, you're going to get this, and maybe we're going to throw in a popcorn. I know that there's a big thing out there in distribution right now, or exhibition. They're calling it the super ticket. Mm. Have you heard about this? Mm. Regal is doing this thing. They've done it for, I think, World War Z was the first one that they did. And it's big up in Canada, of all places, where basically you can spend $20. You get to see the movie a couple of days before its release.
Sure.
So you get to see it like the Wednesday prior to, you know, before the Friday. You'll get a special lanyard, you'll get a free popcorn, maybe a drink, and when it's available, you get a free download of the movie.
Right. Okay.
So, but you pay $20. So, like, you could do things like
get
this.
Get more out of it.
I think what killed Serenity, and again, was they screened the hell out of that movie.
Sure.
If you were, they had screenings, like, weeks and, like, weeks before the thing, and if you were a fan, you could have seen that movie for free. You know, I just think that we're on this learning curve where fan stuff can be efficiently distributed to theaters,
sure.
cost effectively. People can make money, fans can be happy, and we can continue a process. But you're right, Warner Brothers is making money on that.
But I will give it to them. This really all happened in 1 year.
Mm-hmm. I know.
The Kickstarter was March 14th, mm-hmm. I believe, of 2013.
Yeah.
And it came out March
14th.
Yeah, exactly 1 year.
Yeah.
So to have the Kickstarter happen, film this movie, get all these people back, distribute it, now all in a matter of a year, that's like, that hardly ever happens anymore. I mean, fortunately, Rob Thomas had a script already written out because, like, he always loved the Veronica Mars, and he had the storylines in his head for years. He was holding on to the script, and now he had a reason to finally execute it.
Yeah.
But to do this all in 1 year.
Oh, it's amazing.
No one really does that.
No, I know, and you're
so
right.
I will give that to them.
Absolutely.
That probably could have, you know, hindered them in ways because it was so fast in so short amount of time.
Again, we've talked about movies here that have been done, you know, where their shooting schedule has been done, you know, very within a month. And, you know, but I give them credit. I mean, they had an end goal, you know. And again, Rob Thomas, Kristen Bell, the cast, I really appreciate what they did for the fans. Being a fan of certain genre television and movies, I mean, when somebody cares that much, and this is why I respect Kristen Bell, when somebody cares that much about the people that have paid for her house and have helped pay for, you know, having her baby.
She gives back.
That is so, and it's, in some cases, it's rare. Sometimes, like Sarah was saying, sometimes the actors, oh, I was on that show, I'm not going to come back for a reunion. Right. Why? You know, or you're going to pay me a ton of money.
This was a passion project. Yeah.
Do we know what any of these people were paid?
I think everybody was scale except for her, but that's, I think, also because she was a producer on it, too.
Executive producer.
Well, listen, regardless, you fans loved it, you know, and I found it watchable. I didn't hate it. It didn't make me angry. But again, I think it's a great experiment, and I think in the future,
I think people can learn from this movie.
I think they'll look back at Veronica Mars.
If other TV shows that got cancellations and had the uproar from fans, if they want to do this for their show, they can learn from Veronica Mars and realize maybe they should wait more than a year to release it and whatnot. I mean, if it happened for Veronica Mars, for the money that they're getting in this short amount of time, it can definitely happen with other movies and all the social media out there to help that.
Oh, and FYI, I think they've also already announced the Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, what's that? The end of this month? Or when's I think the Blu-ray release is sometime soon.
Yeah, I know the DVD for this movie comes out in May. So I'm guessing the Blu-ray is going to come out too.
Yeah. So that's a short. It's a short window.
It is.
Yeah.
But again, when you have the VOD, that they're allowed, I guess, to condense that. But right. I'm sure that will have. Will you? Okay. Let me ask you this: will you buy the Blu-ray or DVD?
Well, yes,
I get that as well. Huh? I get that as well as part of my package.
Oh, you do.
There you go.
Oh, that's again.
Well, there you go.
But that's a great. Again, that's a great package for you.
Sure.
Was it worth your money?
Oh, totally. The poster, it was really the poster was the reason I got it, because it's signed by everybody. He even was trying to get the musician Rob Thomas to sign it.
Shut up.
I don't know if they were successful.
All right,
but
speaking of musicians,
you're going to buy it.
Absolutely. The music of this movie, and I loved it how it was kind of like an ode to the Veronica Mars. We hear the theme song in two different versions.
Yeah.
We
had the Danny Warhol's original.
Yeah, we hear the regular version, and then we hear that guy who's playing it acoustically on the street.
Sure.
I thought that was a nice little touch. And that was at the beginning of the movie, and so that was kind of the intro theme to.
Is the soundtrack on iTunes yet?
Yes,
it is. I haven't checked.
It is.
Can we hear something?
Because Leighton Meester wasn't in it, Rob Thomas replaced her character with this actress called Andrea Estelle, who is a singer in Twin Sister band that Rob Thomas is actually a personal fan of. And that's why he recasted Carrie Bishop with Andrea. And then to also add to that he put in the Twin Sister music soundtracks as well in the movie. And then there were, you know, the fun party songs that everyone knows and loves and stuff. So, and that was the show. There was usually one standout song that was relevant to that time period that came out.
The CW breaking artist sort of thing. I will confess, though, that I noticed the music more prevalently in this film than I did in the series, which is a good and a bad thing. It's bad when you notice music sometimes, but it felt very cinematic.
Yeah.
It felt bigger than it did on the show.
Well, and we've always talked about music, and, you know, music can help perpetuate a story, and it shouldn't overtake the story, but it should be there. You should recognize it. And if you buy the soundtrack, you know, to me, the music, like, I should be able to listen to the music, close my eyes, and harken back to a particular scene in the movie. So, and I like the music in the movie, too. It was,
There was one, because we know Kristen Bell is a great singer in real life. There was the one point in the movie where they're at the club and there's karaoke there. It just reminded me, there was an episode in Veronica Mars where Veronica is undercover and she has to sing karaoke to get information and, like, put on a show that she's not just being there to be sleuthy, that she's actually trying to blend into the crowd, do karaoke and stuff, and just wanted Veronica to get on stage because it felt like the same place that she was at in that episode. So, I mean, that would have been fun, but of course, you can only fit so much into a movie that's not Veronica's place while she was there. It was nice. Another ode back to the original show.
I was half expecting, because you could tell, I was half expecting that there was going to be some Frozen reference. And, like, I know that the song is attributed to Adele Nazim, but I thought there might have been a point where, like, Veronica Mars said, oh, just let it go or something, and then, like, turn away. But,
well, okay, if you think about it, yes, she was kind of simultaneously doing Frozen at the same time.
Oh, but okay.
When they finished filming Veronica Mars' movie, Frozen wasn't as big as it got to be today. So right. I can understand why they didn't throw any Frozen references in there at that point.
True.
But overall, I did enjoy this movie. I think you guys did too. Mm-hmm. I think Sarah did. I think Phil did.
Phil, what did you think of the movie?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
I haven't seen it quite all the way through yet.
Yeah. But he will.
The signal went bad for me at about like an hour and 20 minutes.
That's not fair.
See, and I think that, you know, that goes to show there were some streaming issues.
Yeah.
And that's why I love DVD. So when this movie comes out on DVD, I highly suggest you get it or on Blu-ray.
Bet you they'll put on some good extras. Ah, this song.
Absolutely. Yeah the Andy theme song.
Yeah. Dandy Warhols.
This was the theme song to the show. So, fun movie. I loved it. I think fans who were original fans of this show will be satisfied with this movie, especially 10 years later, technically now.
Ha!
It still made sense. It still had the same characters, same beats. It felt like an extended Veronica Mars.
Watch it any way you can.
Yeah.
Go to the movies and watch it. I found the movie to be... I don't want to sound like the crumrudgeon. I found the movie to be watchable. If you're not a fan, there are many elements, and you like detective stories, and you like strong woman characters, I believe Veronica Mars could be your ticket at the movies.
And I love intellectual shows like this. Yeah. And I'm all about that.
Smart, snappy dialogue. I mean, this is why we love Joss.
Telling off people.
Exactly.
I mean, who doesn't want to do that and not get... And the fact that I loved how they brought it more adult-like. Just saying, like, fuck off. And then, like, all these things that she couldn't.
They get one F-bomb to stay PG-13.
But they... And
there was even reference to that. I'm keeping this,
But the adults... They brought it to the adult demographic.
What was the line? Thank you very much for keeping this PG-13. That was funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was funny.
But thank you guys for listening. Please listen to our other Anatomy of a Movie podcast. We're doing a bunch of shows here. We have all the spring movies coming up, so definitely check us out for that. You can follow us on Twitter and at Movie Anatomy. Follow us on iTunes. Follow Anatomy of a Movie. Check out the website. Our awesome schedule of our upcoming shows. Thank you, Zach, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great. You could follow me, but just not too close, because sometimes I just stop short.
And so we will see you for our next movie.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.